It's Marketplace Tech for August 19th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. T-Mobile probably wants credit for starting the trend. Verizon finally followed suit, and now Sprint is also reportedly on board. What am I talking about? I'm getting rid of two-year binding contracts for customers who want cell phone service. AT&T is the last big carrier holdout at the moment, but it sure looks like the days of going steady with a company just so they give you a discounted phone are over. Here's Lindsay Turntine, editor-in-chief at CNET.com.
You know, you're leasing the phone, but you really do end up paying the full price of the phone. And this gives people an incentive to shop around for phones. So it probably means a couple of things. There's more of a chance in this model to get a good deal if you're willing to, say, hold on to your phone for a long time. Or there's some incentive to go for a cheaper model, right? Like a Moto X, something that you're happy with, but is maybe not the newest, glossiest phone. You can shop around, you can get a better bargain. And because there are so many different models of Android phones on the market now, there's more choice for people who want to shop for a cheaper phone. And that's going to drive prices down.
In the end, what does all of this mean for consumers? It probably means a more transparent bill.
It may mean for a more transparent bill. It's definitely going to mean more choice. We have this very weird business model in the United States where the carrier has all the power. And the carrier has been the one sort of dictating when you buy a new phone. In the rest of the world, you just buy a new phone when you want a new phone. And then you shop around for carriers. The carrier landscape is more competitive. This model where you lease the phone from the carrier gives you a lot more flexibility. You're not locked in by this two-year contract. The consumer has way more choice, which has been the case around the world for quite some time.
Lindsay Turntine, editor-in-chief at CNET.com. Lindsay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.
While we're talking devices, Google just released a new one. It's called On Hub. It costs $200, and its mission is to be the Wi-Fi router of our smart home future. It's sleek, it's cylindrical, and it has one amazing feature: shows you the Wi-Fi password if you tap on it. No picking the thing up and trying to figure out which 30-character string gets you into Internet Valhalla. It's fair to say that from the Industrial Revolution to the first silicon chip, our relationship with technological change in the workplace has been, shall we say, uneasy. Luddites, Terminators, etc. Well, a new study from the firm Deloitte looked at 140 years of census data in the UK and found that while technology may feel sometimes like it's been sent to destroy us, it has also been a job creation machine over the last century and a half. Ian Stewart is chief economist at Deloitte. Ian, thanks for joining us.
Delighted to.
So you think that this debate, generally speaking, over time has been sort of skewed or biased against technology?
Well, we think so, Ben. I mean, what seems to have happened to us is the job losses from technological change are always conspicuous. But a lot of the gains in terms of employment from technology are rather subtle. If you look at a sector like, say, medicine, tremendous technological change has gone hand in hand with growth in employment. You know, you need people, you need doctors, you need nurses to use these increasingly sophisticated systems. You know, if you look at the proliferation of coffee shops or gyms, technology has reduced the cost of existing goods and services, so clothing costs or food costs. People have more disposable income. That extra demand creates new jobs in sectors which, you know, frankly, 30, 40 years ago, nobody could have dreamt of.
Transition is hard, though, right? It's not easy for people, especially during times of disruption created by technology, to switch from being, I don't know, a launderer to a washing machine repair person or something like that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think this is a destructive process and people are put out of work. So history has lessons about the kind of types of skills which will help people cope with technological change and actually not only cope with it, but prosper from it.
What did you learn about the transference of wealth as it relates to technology?
one of the things that technology and globalization have done is that they have tended to increase the rewards to profits and to capital, and they've tended to squeeze the rewards to less skilled labor. One thing that is absolutely right about this debate and is a constant in it from the 19th century is the key to helping labor prosper. And personally, I think that a lot of basically non-educational skills will become increasingly important. Technological change favors people who are clearly flexible, versatile, and I think in future there are going to be particular skills which will be very highly esteemed, things like creativity, interpersonal skills, and actually whether it's being a care home worker or a management consultant, you know, at opposite ends of the pay spectrum and skill spectrum, those are both non-routine work.
Ian Stewart is Chief UK Economist at Deloitte's UK Insights team. Ian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Some of the technology disruption conversation this week has been about Amazon. The company's intense corporate culture around white-collar jobs was reported in the New York Times this week. One practice that's being debated heavily is collecting different data sets on an employee's performance, what time they leave work, or sales numbers. Well, Lamar Pierce is a professor of organization and strategy at Washington University in St. Louis. He says there are some good things that can come from this kind of data collection.
We know that, you know, women get paid less for doing the same thing. The same thing applies to certain ethnic groups. And so one of the big social implications that everyone wants to understand about this problem is whether or not machine learning models that can extract performance predictions about certain employees and measurements will do a better job of paying people what they're worth rather than paying them based on some inherent biases.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.